Good evening, and welcome back to the December 4th, 2007 meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board did meet in closed session, and we discussed status of negotiations with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. Is there a consensus on the order of business? Okay. Let's go ahead then, and let's do approval of the minutes. And
I move approval of the minutes, a special board meeting November 15th, 2007, and regular board meeting November 20th, 2007.
We have a second. It's been moved by Mr. Millar and seconded by Mr. Buckman. Any comments?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman.
Yes, if I could. I found it very interesting when on page 3 of November 20th, Mr. Miller was able to explain to us a little bit about where mandated costs were, and I was able to come to the meeting because I just happened to pass my computer on the way out the door that CSBA was starting litigation to recover the mandated cost, and then to have Walter further explain it, and I'd like to suggest that that be added to the minutes.
Okay. Mrs. Dickinson?
Could we do that separately, since I was at the November 15 meeting but not the 20th?
Sure. Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. Let's do November 15th first. If we can separate those out. All in favor of November 15th?
Aye.
It carries 5. You were at that meeting, right? That was the one. It carries 6-0. Then we'll move on to November 20th. All in favor?
Aye. Actually, should be 5-0. Catherine was in the board member at that
time. Oh, okay. So we'll take it. Actually, that will be 5-0. You're right. Catherine did abstain on that. Thank you. Let the record reflect that. And then we'll talk about November 20th. All in favor?
Aye.
And that carries 4-0 with two abstentions. Okay. All right, let's move on then to correspondence. The board has not received correspondence prior to the meeting. We'll move on to public comment. Is there anyone who would like to address the public on any matter related to business of the school district? Okay, seeing no one. Then we'll move on to reports by school staff and student representatives to the board. And we have Chelsea here tonight from San Luis Obispo High School.
Hi. Sorry I wasn't here last week or the previous month. We had our senior versus staff softball game at the same time. And so myself and Mr. Jones were up there playing, and the seniors did win. I think the score was 11-4. And we only played 7 innings. So they were very good. They were just moved very slowly. So our first trimester came to an end, and I'll just sum up some of the sports. The girls' tennis team went undefeated in the Pac-7 and advanced to the second round of CIF playoffs, where they were defeated by the #1 seed. And the football team qualified for CIF, and both the boys and girls cross-country teams made it to the Southern Section Finals. And then the members of the Tech Club's robotics team took first place and second at the Cuesta Ed Tech Fair, where the Auto Club took second also. And the ninth grade FFA students dominated the county greenhand competition. And we played Atascadero. We didn't win, though. They were really good. They made it, I think, to like the third round of CIF, and we lost the first round. So, but we had fireworks at halftime, and that was really exciting. And at the same homecoming game, our marching band unveiled their new uniforms that they'd been saving for a few years for. They're 10 times better than the old ones. And congratulations to Miss Jeske, because I know she worked really hard to get all of that. And now that it's second trimester, I hope I name all the sports. We have boys and girls soccer, boys and girls basketball, girls water polo, and wrestling. And I know we have a lot of returning people on those teams, so hopefully we'll do as well as we did last year. And we've never done this before. We're having a blanket drive this year for the homeless shelter. So any coats and blankets, anything warm, we're collecting. And they're going to donate it before winter break. And then
Before you go on, where should folks bring blankets and things like that if they want to donate them?
You can bring it to the Career Center in the building 500 in the Business Center. Or if you know where Mr. Huddle's room is, 201 upstairs in the at Slow High.
Chelsea, excuse me, another question. Are shoes appropriate donations?
I would say yes, but it's a blanket drive.
So, is that what it is? Okay.
But, I mean, if you want to, I would say yes. Go ahead. Anything would be good. And then all 10th grade students will have their vision and hearing screened during the world history class. So we're keeping on top of that. And then the National Hot Rod Association Auto Contest. We had two teams enter. The team won. The members were Cyrus Dalal, Gordon Freerick, Donnie Davis, and Lorenzo Marino. And team two were Wes Reed, Josh Moore, Tyler Romero, and Mike Barrow. And team one was first in the preliminaries, and team two was second. So that was exciting. I don't know if we've ever done that before, but it sounds kind of interesting. And then I mentioned this before, the robotics team placed first. They took first at the first tech challenge qualifying meet 100 pounds of food, which I think is close to what we did last year. And then our choir performs at the PAC, and we have a new choir director named Paul Osborne, and supposedly he's amazing. And so we have on Tuesday, December 18th at 7 p.m. in the Performing Arts Center. I'm pretty sure this is the first their first performance this year. But the treble choir, the concert choir, and chamber choir are performing songs from around the globe. And the Laguna Middle School choir will also be performing there. So that's pretty exciting. I've never gone to a concert choir or a choir concert before. So, and then the holidays are around, and we have 3 weeks until winter break. All of us are looking forward to it. Even all my teachers have said they're really excited for the break, even though we just had Thanksgiving break. And we wanted to wish all of you guys, even the people in the audience, and especially the board members, a happy holidays from Slow High. So.
And I'm just writing down that date. That was December 18th. Did you say at 7 o'clock for the choir concert? Yeah.
December 18th at 7 at the Performing Arts Center.
Unfortunately, we're going to have a board meeting that evening, but I know that if we get out early, I and many of the members would sure like to be able to go to see that. That'd be great. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you have a question, Mrs. Dickinson?
Do you have a band concert at this time of year?
It doesn't say. I am not positive on that.
Okay.
I can check and get back to you, though.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Millar.
A brief item. PB will have, mock trial team will have their first scrimmage in Solvang at 9 a.m. at the courthouse down there. We did it there last year, and they're very nice, and it's a great start for the kids. So come to Solvang at 9 if you can. You can go to Anderson's Bakery before you get there. It'll be great.
And I think next week, the December 11th and 12th are the band and choir concerts from the coast at the PAC as well, and I'm not sure which is which. I think it's the 11th and 12th next Tuesday and Wednesday, and then again the San Luis High Choir concert is the 18th, and that's going to be really exciting.
Cub Scouts, a variety of other community activities represented there. It starts at 6 o'clock on Friday.
Great, and that's through downtown San Luis.
That's right.
Okay, Seeing none, thank you very much, Chelsea. And again, as always, you're welcome to stay, but we understand that you may have other commitments that you need to attend to.
We've heard it all before.
Let's move on then to the status of the state budget. Mr. Miller.
Hi, thank you. You know, after we all have returned from California School Board Association meetings and learned about some of the information we talked about at our last board meeting, I don't see too much has changed in the last couple of weeks since we had our initial discussion about the $10 billion structural deficit within the state budget, that there are no easy solutions to that problem, that some of the solution will probably be visited upon education in one draconian way or another, and that ultimately the state's going to have to come to grips with how they spend their money in a time of declining revenues, just as all government agencies must who have budgets that are out of line with the reality of the fiscal facts that come to light. So in terms of the state budget, it's a mess, and it'll be January 15th before we hear anything from the governor. He did attend the CSBA conference for a meeting or two, but he disclosed absolutely nothing about his intent or of any great interest to help us anticipate the kind of problems we'll be facing if the state chooses to make certain moves. So at this point, the information is about the same as it was, and we must be patient at least until January to find out what the governor intends for his proposals on the state budget for 08-09.
Great. Well, thank you very much. Any questions for Mr. Miller? Okay. Let's move on to item number 3. And the topic is resolution number 070708, positive certificate of adequate funding, first interim report for 2007-2008. And this is as of October 31st, 2007. Mr. Miller.
Thank you. And before I get started, I'd like to recognize Julie Lang, our new Director of Fiscal Services, sitting in the audience. Stand up. Come on. Be recognized. There you go. She has put an enormous amount of effort in preparing her first interim report, and I'm very pleased and happy to have discovered that she's a hard worker and she actually has a great understanding of what her tasks are. So
she's making you look good.
That's it. That's the whole point, isn't it? In the end, the first interim report that's been prepared by Julie and the staff is a reflection of the changes in our budget that was prepared in June of 2007. Actually, it was prepared in April and May, adopted in June, adopted here tonight, or if you want to hold it over until the next time should you have additional questions or information you need in order to make that decision. The changes in the financial condition are a result of several occurrences. One is that the state of California finally adopted its budget, late as always, and as a compromise of what they had anticipated it being, which made changes for us because we went with the story that they were handing out at the time, and that changed when they made their final decisions. Our CBEDS enrollments are known as of October, and CBEDS is a basis of funding by the state on a per ADA basis or per enrollment number, and so we now have funding, program funding on a number of programs that is known. The carryover of unspent allocations from prior years, as mandated by district policy and the Ed Code, has now been distributed into expense accounts. When we adopted our budget, we didn't know what carryover was because we adopted it before the end of our fiscal year when we made all of our final accounting changes. And expenditure and revenue accounts have been adjusted to match the known facts. Obviously, in April and May, we don't know what the final tax assessments are. It's always a best guess, and we now know what the billable assessments are. And that's a little bit different than what the paid assessments are going to be because some people go delinquent, some people go late, some delinquents are paid in the current year. Those kinds of things impact the dollars. But we have a known amount of what the assessments are. The adjustments in major revenues are our property taxes went up by $1.2 million. That was a combination of property taxes being a little bit higher on the assessed side, and there was an additional amount of homeowner's exemption and I think the delinquencies that were due to come in. So the combination of those three factors brought it up $1.2 million. Federal revenues, we budgeted an additional $173,000 of known revenues. State revenue, we know what some of our categorical funding is. State revenue for us is almost totally categorically restricted monies, and $1,156,000 is known at this time. That number also will fluctuate based upon what the state does, either in a budget-cutting mode, they could take back some of that money, or when they finally get around to paying us or appropriating money for such things as the district's discretionary block grant that they paid 75% of but are still withholding 25%, and there's other, certainly all of the categorical monies going into one pot or one identified expenditure account for distribution at a future date by the school site. District has the money, puts it into the school accounts, but puts it all into books and supplies, because that's where most of it is spent from. And then the school site councils make their decision after they know what they've got and redistribute it into different expenditure categories. So that $3 million is a representation of carryover and restricted program expenditures, which will almost certainly change to other account classifications. Operating expenses up $1.1 million. Going to page 3.3, changes to ending fund balance. We have a very we have a healthy ending fund balance, and out of that ending fund balance, there are a lot of distributions that occur either through the strategic plan of ongoing money or one-time money. And if you look on the page to the right of this on 3.4, our ongoing strategic plan allocations were $416,000. And our original one-time allocations were $983,000. That is a strategic allocation of known revenues. And it's strategic in the sense that we feel the $416,000 was guaranteed to be ongoing. We felt that the allocation of one-time money, not to be repeated in subsequent years, was a beneficial allocation to students and our organization into these programs. So, for instance, Pacheco is in between, hopefully it's in between, its grant money. In order to support itself, because of its programmatic nature, it has a high need for ongoing dollars. $175,000 was given to them on a one-time basis. We will look at that on a continuing year-over-year basis, depending on the status of the grant money. So in order to continue Pacheco, it needed $175,000. The student information system, we needed to do that because SASE had gone away, was no longer being supported. We needed to buy a new software system. It was a one-time allocation of $82,000, so forth and so on. Going back to page 3.3, we talk about some of the changes to the ending fund balance. I'd like to point out a couple of the highlights. School site block grants, $239,000 was distributed as per required earlier discussion about restricted funding, a place called additional encroachment. And I think that requires a little more explanation. It's not really an additional encroachment because there's a negative there. What it really is a reduced encroachment. So where we had budgeted for an encroachment, when we found out the actual numbers, example, home-to-school transportation, there was a deferred revenue amount of about $130,000 that the state ended up giving us that reduced their encroachment. Special ed, when we got our appropriation from the state, we got more than we estimated, $117,000, so forth and so on. K-3 class size reduction is a great example of something that happens to us from time to time. We budget on the previous year's staffing, and people retire, and the new hires are cheaper than the original staff member. We saved about $100,000 on that particular encroachment. So it really wasn't an additional encroachment. It was a reduced encroachment. On down at the very bottom, there's a $3 million number transferred to Fund 20 for GASB 45. We have an unfunded liability of $11 million. We've been making funding allocations to it. We now have $4.5 million funded of the $11 million unfunded liability. we will continue to make the allocation of one-time money to the extent that the budget can handle it without cause for distress to our ongoing or normal programs. So this is a liability that we have a deadline to fund, and we'll continue to make strides to do it. It is one-time money. It was in the reserves. It is now in a different fund lockdown for either future use in time of crisis or potentially paying off our unfunded liability at some point in the future. It's also known for those that were at CSBA as GASB 45 liability. Okay, so that may be the buzzword you know that by. And finally and briefly is the summary page of the first interim report. It is a two-columner depiction of our adopted budget and our first interim budget, and the differences between the numbers are basically a result of all of the changes which we just went through. And what you see on the far right column is an explanation footnote number one, and if you look on page 3.6, the explanation is that are essentially savings accounts for us. We put them aside, as you would put aside money for Christmas or buying a house or whatever your goal is, you save money. We save money in these particular areas and then allocate them according to strategic planning or common fiscal sense, wherever we need to place that money. And what you see on the right-hand side is most of those accounts are wiped out because they've been moved into expenditure accounts up in that number two area, footnote two, which is the expenditures. So the money goes from your savings account, and it goes to make a payment on the purpose for which you were saving money. And that's how all of these different boxes of the fund balance are. Those are for specific money saved for specific reasons. And eventually it would all be spent if our perfect world comes to pass. And so finally, what we would ask is that the board consider adoption of the first interim report resolution that establishes the district will meet its financial obligations in 2007-2008, and that the district will meet its financial obligations not only in that year, but also in the following 2 years.
Okay. And I'll take it to the public. Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak on item number three? Okay. Seeing no one, then I'll bring it back to the board. Would somebody like to make a motion on this? Or do we want to just make a discussion? Because we can do either one this evening.
Mark, well, I just have two questions.
Okay, so then nobody's going to make a motion, so go ahead, Mr. Buckman.
Yeah.
I had looked at this and noticed that the budget, where before we had a balanced budget, now we have an unbalanced budget. And I think I heard that the reason in what you said, Russell, but it was very fast and there was a lot there. So if you could just go over more slowly how we got from a balanced budget to what looks like an unbalanced budget.
Certainly. Okay. What Mr. Buckman is directing your attention to is located on page 3.5.
Right.
And in our adopted budget, we had almost $66 million worth of revenues. That's located under footnote number one. Under footnote number two are the expenditures, and they amounted to almost $66 million. And the number into expenditures as per our savings plan and our strategic plan and all the other allocations that we're required to make based on restrictive programs. And finally, the $3 million that we transferred to Fund 20 from this general fund is accounted for in that $6 million deficit also. So my point would be this. We do have a structural deficit. We do have not a structural deficit. We have a budget deficit, which is a result of our planned expenditures on the basis of spending down our savings account.
Okay. And if I could just ask this, my second half of my question. On 3.102, which is, I think, the highest point that I've gotten to.
You read all that? 3.102?
I opened the page up, and I found a question.
Okay.
This is the projection the multi-year projection.
Correct.
And what I'm looking at is the revenue, the same revenue sources that we had, and we're showing a 1% increase in revenue limit. Federal reserves are down 2.75, but under other state revenues, in fact, from that point down, we're showing increases. And just now during your budget report, we talked about how dire things are. I'm even hearing rumors of possible mid-year cuts coming down. And so if you can explain how we're projecting a 4% increase.
Sure. When we did the multi-year projection, it was a month ago or so. And at that particular time, and even to this day, the COLA is scheduled to be in excess of 4%. The COLA applies at this moment in time to categorical programs. So whatever we were getting in SIP, EIA, we'll be getting COLAs for that. Now, should the state decide not to fund the COLA, which is a distinct possibility, then we will have to change our multi-year projections and move to a different multiplier or zero. But ultimately, we can only do we can only make these calculations based on the best assumptions available. And the assumptions that are being passed down to us both by the state and other consulting groups are that COLA is going to be 4.85%.
Okay. And just lastly, on the same page down under expenditures number four, books and supplies, are you projecting about a 20%?
I'll move resolution, approval of resolution 070708, positive certificate of adequate funding.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion from board members?
I just had one more item. Mr. Miller, as Mark had brought up, the fund balance on page 3.5 is really the critical number in terms of the health of the district, where there's a ending balance of $8,825,000. That is the health, or that's the figure that indicates the positive.
The ending fund balance on 3.5 is located at footnote 4, and it's $8,825,000.
And that's the health. That indicates the bottom line health in terms of the financial status of a district.
And there's a couple of specific numbers to look at out of that $8 million, and they are located in footnotes 5, 6, or in 6, 7, and 8, and finally in 9. And under footnote 5, we have a 5% economic uncertainty of 5% or $3.6 million of that $8.8 million. Of the balance that's left over, it's divided between restricted balances that we don't have access to that we're required to follow according to Ed Code, one-time revenues identified as monies never to be repeated, and finally, lottery and other money under board policy. We withhold the lottery funding of this current year until next year to make sure that we have what we're going to budget to get. And then there's an unappropriated amount of $1.7 million, which is available for things that come up during the school year that might have been unlooked for or necessary to fund as we go forward.
Yeah, because not to make this simple, because it's not simple in any means, but if the ending balance was in a negative at any given point, then there would be a problem.
But
during the school year, the revenues come in at different times, the expenditures occur at different times, so you're going to have the fluctuation of accounts either being above or below, but it's the ending balance which really indicates.
The one thing we never want to get to is a year-over-year decline in our ending balance. And while we have an adopted budget, so it's $15 million. I've explained why that went down to $8 million. But if you looked at the previous year, it would have been $6 million. So we actually had an increase of $1.5 million to $2 million on a year-over-year basis. And if you're declining in that particular number, you have to know why. You have to be able to say, we've got money to spend for energy improvements, and we continue to do so, such things as replacing ballasts or anything that has to do with energy. We're being asked to look at funding a solar array.
Yeah, that's what I was curious about.
And for whatever money that we would need to look at that, I would consider this an appropriate source of funds.
Thanks.
I just have one question, please.
So on 3.3?
Yes.
The $3 million transfer to Fund 20, is that the same as our 5% reserve for economic uncertainty?
No. The transfer to Fund 20?
Yes.
No. Under GASB 45, it's a proclamation from the accounting world. We used to have a pay-as-you-go method of accounting for our health benefits for retirees. Now they want us to account for it on an accrual basis, which means we have to fund it as it's earned. So in the past, retirees and active employees had a cost, and I make the number up for simplicity, $500,000 a year. Because we now have to fund our ongoing or actual plus any future liabilities, that allocation has grown to $750,000. Over a 20-year period, it is judged to be an $11 million nut that we have to crack. So we are funding that GASB 45 unfunded liability. It's actually a liability, but government accounting allowed us to do on a pay-as-you-go method. Well, now the accounting community says, no. You have to join the real world here and start funding it on an ongoing liability basis. That's what that's for. The number below that, the update of 5% for economic uncertainty, that's the 3%, which your board policy now has established as a 5% number. And the increase of that is related to the increased expenditures in this year's budget over last year's. So the $309,000 is what's needed to bring it to the 5% level on our current spending level of money. Okay?
Yes, excellent. Thank you. And so that's why you're able to say that at the top of this page that the expenses are greater than the revenue, and that leads to a perception of deficit spending, but yes. It's not a reality,
right.
Is what you're telling us.
Because we set aside money that wasn't revenue, but was from our revenues of prior years, and we now saved it, okay, because of past years, and now we're spending it in this particular.
Millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars in GASB 45 debt that they're going to have to somehow make up. I know Fresno has a huge multi-million dollar debt, and LA Unified does as well. And
And the big districts.
It's going to be good for our employees who retire that they've got the money there.
You know what it's good for? It's good for guaranteeing that they're going to get that for which they were contracted to receive. An example of what catastrophic occurrence would be that, let us say that we lose Diablo Canyon and we go back to revenue limit. How could we ever hope to fund that which we owe without being in a status of revenue that was a result of what we promised to pay? So we no longer have the revenue for which we could maintain our promises. Thus, we would have to default on our promises. But if we fund it in this particular manner, it's done. It's over with. We're good to go for all future people who might want to retire.
Well, we have a motion and a second on the floor. Any other discussion? Seeing none, Mrs. Holmes?
If I could just confirm, Mrs. Dickinson, are you the second? Thank you. Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mrs. Dickinson? Dr. Eisengrath Rogers? Mr. Spadafore?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Great. Let's move on to item number 4, Los Osos Water Wells. Mr. Parker?
While Brad comes forward, if I might, Mr. Unger, I just want to note that this item is actually in response to a suggestion that came forward from Marilyn Roger, and just want to thank her for bringing that to the board's attention and letting us look into that as staff.
Yes, and I would note for the public that Mrs. Roger is ill, and she's not at the meeting this evening, and we wish her a speedy recovery.
He has to turn up the volume. Wake up, Bob.
I can't. Okay, now it is. Thank you. It's high tech. In response to the board's inquiry about what we could do to help mitigate the water difficulties that the Los Osos community is having, why we looked at the possibilities of domestic water savings devices and we determined that it really paled in comparison with the amount of water that's used for irrigation at our schools in Los Osos. that probably does, and the one school that probably does is Los Osos Middle School. And we would propose that we would do test well drilling there to determine that we would, in fact, have adequate groundwater resources. Going through the process of getting quotes for well drillers, et cetera, the process moved forward, and our consultant did a lot of groundwork with county planning staff and environmental determinations, et cetera, just to pave the way for eventual permitting for our well drilling. One of the requests that county staff made was that we obtain a letter from the water purveyors in Los Osos stating that they did not object to our plan to put in irrigation wells. And if I could just back up for just a second, we plan to put these irrigation wells into the upper aquifer, which is largely unused for domestic water purposes, and the area in question is of great benefit to pull our irrigation water from, as opposed to pulling our irrigation water from the community supply. So we, in a sense, would be capturing a whole new resource for our irrigation purposes, and we're probably the largest water user in the Los Osos area. Our consultant, Cleason Associates, felt that this was a real win-win situation for the school district because our annual cost for water would go down by over $100,000, and for the community because their drain on the lower aquifer, which is where their problem area is primarily, with seawater intrusion, would be reduced by a like amount. We received a letter from the water purveyors in which they object to our proceeding with the project, at least at this time, because they're in the process of trying to come up with a basin management plan. And their letter is attached. We've forwarded this to our legal counsel for a review to try and determine exactly what our water rights are, as well as what the potential liabilities are if we were to move forward as the water purveyors intimate that there could be some legal entanglements. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and we hope to come back to the board when we have a definitive legal opinion so that we'll have a little bit better direction.
Mr. Millar.
Thank you. Brad, will using water from the upper aquifer for irrigation, will a good portion of that water recharge that upper aquifer after use?
Let me speak specifically about Los Osos Middle School, because I asked our consultant that just last week, and said that very little, if any, of that upper aquifer water in that particular area of the basin would be recharged water to the lower aquifer.
Irrigation find its way back into the upper aquifer?
Not unless we over-irrigate. Okay. Ideally, we irrigate exactly what the evapotranspiration rate is, and just what the water, what the grass uses, and what evaporates.
And the potential nitrate intrusion in the upper aquifer is not an issue for us in the use of that as irrigation water.
It's probably good for the grass.
I thought maybe it might be. And of course, we were not involved in this process because we were actually customers of these water purveyors.
That's correct.
So. So basically we're stuck on determining whether or not we want to enter into this process that's already underway and potentially what expense that involves, or is one of the legal questions being considered whether we have a right to stake our own claim to that basin water and utilize it on our own?
That is one of the questions. We want to make sure that we, in fact, would have water rights and we could move forward. Secondly, we're not sure that we would be drawn into the friendly adjudication process that's going on amongst the purveyors. We wouldn't be a purveyor. We wouldn't be selling water. Yep. We would be simply using water.
Okay. So it would basically be a determination of an apportionment of our water rights.
Correct. And if I could add one more thing. The purveyors hint that there may be environmental ramifications.
And hint is a gentle way of putting it.
Our consultant, Cleason Associates, is also their consultant, and in fact advised them that this was a win-win, and have advised me that in their opinion, in their scientific opinion, there is no environmental impact, and that it should just be a negative declaration.
Oh, that's encouraging. Thank you.
We started this because we wanted to help the water shortage situation and be a positive team player in the community,
yes,
as I understand it. So it sounds like when we're finding information from the community, they're saying, at least the water company, and I don't know if that represents the community or just a vested interest, But it sounds like the community is saying the way that you can be the best team player is to wait and not proceed with this well project. And they bring up the idea of perhaps using treated water from the sewer once it's established, which seems like that would be a good use for that type of water to irrigate rather than well water, which might be really, and wouldn't that be nice, clean, pure, brand new, pristine water? I don't know if it would be, but...
Tertiary treated water. Right now, they do not have a tertiary treated water plan. They may develop a tertiary treated water plan for use for use with their treated effluent, and they may need to have us. Or they may request that we utilize some of that water at our schools. Whether or not that will ever come to pass remains to be seen. Whether or not the board would decide to, in fact, use the treated water remains to be seen. And if the treated water use in San Luis Obispo that the board has agreed to at Laguna Middle School is any indication, you're paying 90 cents on the dollar for that treated water versus virtually free irrigation water. So just some of the things to keep in mind as you're considering the situation.
It isn't part of what has to happen with the sewer the recharge of the lower aquifer? So,
I'm not sure.
I guess, yeah, okay.
I think that's part of the basin management plan that will answer some of those questions, because right now they don't have a plan to reduce the seawater intrusion into the lower aquifer, and they need to develop a basin management plan. And tertiary treated groundwater recharge may be one of those plans. And things get even more complicated. You get into water pressure and where they recharge. In some places where they recharge, if the pressure differential is not satisfactory, it doesn't recharge the lower aquifer. In other places where it has more head and they recharge, then it will actually pressure its way into the lower aquifer. So it's fascinating to read the scientific reports that have been done on the basin, but it is far over my head to be able to adequately explain it.
Yeah, thank you, and Brett, thanks for the information and what you've brought. I'm glad you're reading this rather than I would have to read this. It wouldn't work. But my question was, do you believe the issue is becoming one of the group seeing it as one resource that needs to be managed by one administration, and that brings in these issues about whether it's a technical and scientific discussion or whether it's becoming a legal discussion or whether it's a financial discussion, or is it all of these things that are kind of percolating to the top, no pun intended, in terms
right.
of how they see their role, how they see the financial aspect of this, because basically we could become a separate entity providing our own source resource here.
I think it's probably all those things as well as economics.
Yeah.
Because we are a very large customer.
Sir, 18 months, and if I understand this correctly, although it would cost us $300,000 to dig these wells and get these wells operational, and that would take 3 years for us to pay back, after that we would start recouping over $100,000 a year savings if we were to proceed with the plan that
That's
you're
correct.
Suggesting.
And if we want to talk about the time frame for just a minute, well drillers are very busy now, and it's taken an enormous amount of time to get to the point where we got a contract with a well driller. And they've still said it's going to be months before they could even drill the test wells. So 12 to 18 months in the context of when we could actually roll out wells and well systems at four schools, I think we probably have easily 12 months before we could even complete them.
Thanks. Hi, Brad. Offhand, and I don't know if you have this information, are there other private entities that are not purveyors that are either sinking wells at this time, or are there private wells operating?
The golf course in Los Osos has their own wells, and they're a private user. And they were originally enjoined with the other purveyors, and then they were dismissed by the other purveyors.
They also get the golf course, I think, also gets treated effluent from the Monarch Grove development, don't they?
I think in part, yes. I'm not familiar with the other users and whether or not they're in the sphere of influence of the basin or not. I believe there are other users.
Okay. What I'm sort of looking for is a precedent that would be on our side. Thanks.
Well, I'm comfortable waiting until we at least hear back from, I guess, is Mr. Green looking at this stuff?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, I'd like to hear back from our attorney about what's going to happen with this. Any other discussion on this item right now? Does the public have anything to say about this? Thank you, Mr. Moore. The only other thing, and it may be more appropriate for advanced agenda, I'm interested because we're talking about this as saving water and saving resources in Los Osos, talking about the possibility of looking at artificial turf in some of those locations, and I'll bring that up at advanced agenda items.
Thank you.
Okay, let's move on to item number 5, new and modified K-12 courses for 2008-2009. Mrs. Delkiskamp.
Good evening, everyone. Reviewing the process, what you should know is that in the spring of year one, what we do is teachers get together. They collaborate with other teachers of their same grade levels or like courses, and they develop or propose courses that they feel will meet student needs that have arisen or course content evolvement. And after they propose these courses are approved by department chairpersons and principals before they are forwarded to the Instructional Services Department. In the fall of year two, this time beginning in August and September, course outlines are completed, and then the proposed course list is reviewed by our curriculum council and also by our principals before it is presented to you, as is being done this evening. Then, following your approval, which we will seek at the next board meeting, the course list adoption instructional materials will be brought back to you in March. And then finally, the following year, in the fall of 2008-09, is when we would hope to implement these courses. As far as the information you have in front of you, that course list, I just want to provide a brief summary. What you'll notice on this proposed list is, for example, one of the first courses, Alternative Curriculum for Severely Handicapped. This is the course name for those special education classes that we are transferring from the county to our district. Okay. Other new courses that are included are ROP courses or Regional Occupational Program courses in various departments, in agriculture, in art, in business, computer science, home economics, and physical education. And in addition, you'll notice other courses, new courses such as the string orchestra course that's being proposed for Morro Bay High School and San Luis Obispo High School. But aside from these new courses, our course list also contains courses that are being modified. And some of the course modifications that are being proposed include changes to the course prerequisites, or changes to course names, or changes to course descriptions, changes to the course instructional materials, and then changes to the course curriculum. Okay, and that's a brief overview of what's contained in that list. So at this point,
County Office of Education.
Okay. I met with Jackie Kirk Martinez, our Director of Student Services, today. And in our conversations, and what she explained was, as we take those courses, as we transfer those courses from the county to our district, all of the instructional materials that are currently being used in those courses are also coming with the classes. And that's why at this point we don't anticipate.
Well, it's been my experience that the county office has been spending money on curriculum for their classes, and I would hope that would continue with us, not just taking back what the county office has. So I'd be interested in knowing what specifically we're doing to look at curriculum for these classes, and then how it's going to be judged as appropriate for our students. And I'd like to know what the budget impact of that's going to be, and I'd like to also know what the process for determining curriculum is.
Okay. Well, the curriculum we're adopting along with this course that we are transferring from the county to our district office. I mentioned earlier that in March we go through an instructional materials review. What has been presented so far, and in speaking with Jackie, is that the curriculum that we follow is the CECO curriculum, And in those classes, we have these instructional materials. Now, if they're like with any of our courses, if there should be a need to investigate alternative materials or other materials, then that would be part of our process for adopting materials.
That's great, and I am familiar with the CECO curriculum, and it's a basis for writing goals and objectives and for modifying some curriculum. I don't know that it is completely a curriculum in and of itself, and I know there are commercial curriculum products that are available specifically for functional academics for our students. And I would be interested in knowing what our plans are to provide those kinds of experiences for our students. And so you're telling me that will be brought back in March?
Well, what I'm saying, for example, sooner? This curriculum of which you speak, as is described here in the course description, has uh-huh. these two main components. It has right. all of the standards identified
Correct.
In those various areas, and then it also has these other functional skill areas. And it is those two areas that are used in order to determine, per the IEP of the student,
the CECO curriculum
will be.
Or 2-3-ring binder, knowing what that looks like, and again, knowing when we could expect to hear back from that.
Well, if I might, we'll certainly get back to you, and those are good questions. The sort of general concept that we're working off of is, number one, the curriculum that the county is using, and presuming that is an adequate and sufficient curriculum, is what is being brought over wholesale for the new courses that we're bringing over. In addition to that, we use a similar, if not identical, curriculum in our own SDC classes, which already exists within the school district. This process of new and modified courses is kind of formalizing the bringing of that curriculum over with those classes. What would happen from that point on, or at this point on, or whatever, regarding a sort of fleshing out of that curriculum, an evolution of that curriculum, an enrichment of that curriculum, would be part of the ongoing curriculum development process in the district, and we'd be pleased to share that with you.
Great, and thank you, and I look forward to hearing about that. I'm not sure who was next. I'll start with Mr. Buckman, and then we'll come on down the table this way.
Thank you. I want to thank you. This is all very good and very exciting reading. As the regional occupational program representative from this board to the county board, I'm particularly happy to see these ROP classes. For me, they represent sort of the link between education and the end, which is not college, but is getting a job somewhere. And the other thing, I'm not sure whether, looking at this, if we shouldn't be changing the name of ROP to Rapid Response Classes, because mm-hmm. I'm looking at digital imaging, computer networking, instruction to sports medicine, and health careers, all areas that, even in this area, in this community, we need. So thank you very much.
And I think what we need to do is thank the teachers in our district who work hard to be in tune with what's going on and to bring this forward.
I just they're the best questions I have, but I'm going to go ahead and ask them. I'm really kind of curious of what flash animation is. Could anybody tell me what flash animation is? Or is that, should that be a future agenda item?
I would propose a study session.
Oh. If a member of the public can tell me, I'll meet with you later, Bob. Thank you.
Yeah, that's the exciting part of our ROP program in our classes. There's a community experience that our students have. So our teachers establish sites that are appropriate, and we work in partnership with them to allow our students to be in the field working on their various curricular paths. So it's exciting that we have these off-campus sites, and they basically travel and to the site and spend time working with professionals in the field.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Rita, thank you again, and for the teachers and the staff that helped put this together. Is there a way to know which of these courses that are being added are required for graduation and which ones are electives by looking at this? And if not, could that be added?
You know, most of what is on here are electives.
But could that be added at some point just to have an idea of what we're doing with the curriculum that has to do with the required elements and then which ones are electives and what areas they're addressing? That would help.
Sure.
Thank you. And thank you for the work on this.
Ms. Dickinson.
I thought it was very exciting reading it also. Fashion design. I have a niece who did a great job. Bakersfield High School is a wonderful ROP fashion, and she went on to San Francisco State and is just rocking the world. Do we have enough sewing machines for our new interior fashion design? I hope we do. I'm excited about the strings program. That's like a first ever at both high schools. That is so exciting. The sports medicine, I just thought the whole thing was really fun, and I'm glad for our students that they have these exciting options. A couple of questions. The physical education class, is that just a renaming of the new curriculum, or is that an additional?
Are you speaking of the one on page 5.7 that says physical fitness for health?
Yes, I am.
Actually, that is a new course.
And how does that fit in with the regular PE requirement and all?
Okay. It is an addition. It's an elective added to the course offerings for ninth graders, and this came out of a recommendation from a committee that was formed earlier this year, and the goal is to help those students who need that extra opportunity to be able to have the opportunity to achieve the state fitness testing requirements.
Sounds good. And my other question was the special education one on page 5.8. I'm glad we're getting rid of the SE. And the students at Arroyo Grande High School felt this.
To students. So an intervention class, for example, we might have English 9 intervention. And that would be a resource class that basically follows the same curriculum as the English 9 class, but with some not significant, but minor modifications, mm-hmm. whereas when you go to the modified courses, there are significant modifications for the students in that class, still using the English 9 curriculum, but with more significant modifications. And then the alternative courses actually have an alternative
right.
curriculum.
Like teaching reading at a fifth grade level or whatever it might be.
Well, much like literacy. The program that was described when we were talking about the very first course.
Okay.
That applies to those classes that are transferring over.
Wouldn't they be
the
kind
county?
Of in between one, between that, those courses we were first describing and...
Well, these are in order. Mm-hmm. Intervention having the fewest
right.
modifications, modified having more, and then alternative being a completely different curriculum.
Is that the same, though, as the one for the severely handicapped class? I'm guessing it
that isn't. Is my understanding.
You know, I don't
my,
think so.
Can I jump in here for just a second?
So, yeah.
My guess is that some of these course descriptions also align with some of the interventions that are allowed in the state testing, because we talk about modified and alternative state testing
right.
as well.
Okay.
So
yeah, that's a good point. Mm. Using that same language, that's a good point. Okay. I think that was it. Maybe I had one more. Oh, thank you so much. Wonderful.
You're welcome.
Okay. I'm sorry, Catherine.
I'm sorry. I just have one question. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Rita. Actually, two questions. When you reference a course and you say this exists at Morobe High School only or Morobe High School and San Luis Obispo High School, if it says one high school or the other only, does that mean that that class or that course already exists at the other high school?
No, it just means that it's being introduced for that high school now. If afterwards the other high school would like to also offer it, then everything is in place. We would just need to, you know, provide instructional materials once the course has been adopted for that other one. But at this point, it's only San Luis Obispo High School who is requesting a certain course.
And that's because it's come from a particular instructor that you might have available to teach mm-hmm. it at that particular school?
And it's a site decision.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. And also, my other question is on 5.7 under mathematics. I'm not quite sure I understand, but I'm
close to Algebra 1 being only a one-year
yes.
course.
I'm familiar with that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other discussion from board members? Is there anybody from the public that would like to talk about these? I didn't go to the public on this yet.
Okay. Seeing no one, now, if it's the board's pleasure, we could go ahead and take action on this item. Okay, would somebody like to make a motion?
I'll make a motion that we accept. Okay.
Moved by Mr. Buckman, seconded by Mr. Spadafore. Okay, and the motion is to accept the new and modified K-12 courses for 2008-2009. All in favor?
Aye.
It carries 6-0. Thank you very much, Mrs. Delkus-Camp.
Thank you.
Let's move on to action consent. Please let me know if you would like an item pulled. I'll go to public comment right now. Is there anybody that would like in the public that would like to talk about any item that's on the action consent agenda? And seeing none, let's go ahead then. Item number 6, approval of certificated and classified personnel items.
Pull.
Number 7, acceptance of donations. Number 8, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 9, approval of purchase orders. And 10, approval of warrants and payroll. Would somebody like to make a motion? And Mrs. Rogers, would you like to make a motion?
Okay.
Sure.
I move that the board accepts consent items 7 through 10.
Okay, and who would like to second that?
I'll second.
Seconded by Mr. Millar. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed carries 6-0. Mr. Spadafore, item number 6.
Thank you. I actually had a question for Rick. Rick, I noted the paraeducators again on the list.
Yes.
For resignation and release. Is there any issue regarding the retention and situation with paraeducators before the Personnel Commission at the present time regarding nothing?
No, there hasn't been any discussion. We've grown to by next year with the 5 county programs we're taking, we will have over 100 paraeducators in our school district. We have 70 something right now, and so we can expect it is our largest class of classified. We have 2 classifications. Instructional aid special education is one of the classifications, and the other is behavioral health specialists. Both of those groups will fall under our special ed paraeducator class.
So they'll fall into that classification.
Yes.
In that group. Okay, thanks. I'll make a motion that action consent item number 6 be approved.
And Mrs. Dickinson seconds that. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Carries 6-0. Let's move on to advanced agenda. Does anybody have anything that they'd like to put on the advanced agenda? You know what I was going to do? What I was thinking is I was going to do board reports. Well, I was going to do advanced agenda, and then I thought because board reports, I'm assuming, is going to be a lot of people reporting on CSBA, and then I thought what we could do with the approval of the board is let that kind of trickle in, and then next meeting, if there's anything that resonates, bring that back for advanced agenda, if that's acceptable. The one thing that I did want to discuss is relating back to the Los Osos water and what got me there was, and even thinking about it, was I was at a football game at Morro Bay High, and a parent came up to me and said, with the water shortages that people are talking about in Morro Bay anyway, why aren't we looking at artificial turf? And I know that there's a lot more to it than saying, let's rip out all the sod and put in artificial turf. And so I've been kind of thinking about it, and when I was at CSBA, there were several artificial turf booths, and I happened to check one out that felt exactly like real turf. And so I know there are issues related to cost, primarily because I know it's expensive, and then whether it wears, you know, the durability of it, the installation, the preparation. I stepped on it, and you know what? It felt exactly like real turf. There's a base on it, and then on top of the base there is shredded tires that the turf actually sits on. I'm not trying to sell one thing or the other, but aside, there's the issue of water. There's also the issue of maintenance, possibly chemicals that we're possibly putting into Morro Bay because of the the need to make sure that our lawns are healthy and green. I'm wondering if board members would have an interest, probably beginning with a Friday packet. Go ahead, Mr. Buffman.
I'm just thinking that there's so many alternatives out there, and there's so much research that maybe this is a Friday memo before we bring it back.
Yeah, and I'm not saying bring it back for a board item at all. I'm saying let's look at what some of the issues might be, and then because it's something that we'll have to look at cost. There's a lot to it. This is not something that's just going to be easy, but just even to get us thinking about it over a longer period of time. So it sounds like I've got some support to at least start looking at that. Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, what I'm hearing is to start with the Friday packet and to just kind of take a look at the pros and cons of each and go from there.
Yeah, and I'm not asking for it for this Friday. I think, you know, it's going to be something that's going to take a while for us to really explore.
I was just going to suggest, you know, I think we have agenda items, and I think there's a point in holding something, but I would suggest that we remove the Brown Act from an agenda item, not to be scheduled, so it just doesn't sit there. I think with the legal symposium every year at the CSBA meeting that board members can sit and listen to a lot of information about the Brown Act, and it'll be more concise and repetitive, and I think having it here as a placeholder may not be that realistic, actually.
Okay, everybody.
Can we take direction on that?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Los Osos Water is one. And then the other one that I brought up several months ago and is electronic board agendas, and I guess I'm of the opinion it's not ready for prime time yet. The electronic board agendas. And I know Mr. Buckman looked at some of them and
I have a question about one of the items that I was just reading about. It's revenue enhancements. And if possible, could we get a little clarity about where that one's going? Because it's always our mission to enhance our revenues. And if you just need a report about what we've done to enhance our revenues, we can easily provide that. But if it's some other issue, I think we need to have a little bit more definition of that.
I think in light of the state budget issues, and in light of our situation as a basic aid district, that discussion could be, I think, presented on an agenda when the board is ready at a time where there's some where there's a period that, and it's an educational process also with our community.
Okay.
Talk about what kind of district we have and what we'll be able to do with the funding that's available through the state and what other sources may be there, just to discuss it.
So clearly what we are looking at is a future item that, depending on how the state resolves its issues and what our future funding looks like, we might want to structure this discussion to address those changes. Okay, so we won't do anything about it right now. We'll wait for a future time. Good. Thank you.
If I might, Mr. Spadafore, in April and May of the current school year, but next calendar year. Okay.
May I just add one thing, though? Not knowing what that meant, I imagine that it might have to do with what other districts are doing that are innovative in terms of creating new revenue streams. I'm hoping that we might at some point be able to discuss that. I have to do some research and just sort of know what those might be without waiting to hear from the state on those issues. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, one of our board goals is revenue enhancement, and so I think we need to start having that discussion, so I'm really excited about that. Okay, anything else for advanced agenda items? Okay, let's talk about reports.
Mr. Unger?
Yes, sir, I'm sorry.
A quick question. I wanted to clarify the conversation on the new and modified courses. You mentioned when would we bring back a discussion of, and if you could clarify that.
Sure. Yeah, my concern is that we have no budget impact for the transfer of this, at least in terms of curriculum. Let me get back to that item, please. Yeah, sure. Go ahead. Yeah.
Just a comment on this is that you were not able to be here when we discussed this because of your conflict of interest. So we all had similar questions and had them kind of resolved. We asked things like that. What about the materials? What about the curriculum?
What I'm seeing is no budget impact, which indicates to me that we're not planning on, that we're just taking what we get and not looking at other curriculum items. And
it might
true
be a transition period, though, where we take it all over and then start working with it. But I'm just thinking that you missed out on some of the discussion.
Absolutely, I did.
Because we were had a very similar question.
Well, and it sure concerns me that I see this here.
And the only thing, and the reason I asked for clarification is because obviously we have no other courses listed except for new and modified courses here, and there is an ongoing curriculum development process that exists for any subject matter that comes forward. But I wanted to reassure the board just from a comfort level standpoint that what we are doing with respect to the five classes coming over is that the same children will be in the same classroom with, for the most part, the same teacher and all of the same materials and all of the same curriculum that exists today. The only thing that has shifted is the management of the program. And certainly, once it becomes our program, it will evolve as any other program does, and we can certainly discuss that process. But I want to make sure the board understands that the transfer process brought virtually a seamless shift of the county program to San Luis Coastal.
Yeah, and I'm not questioning that at all. What I guess I'm looking at is when we say no budget impact on possible curriculum for these classes, I think there will be a budget impact, and I think it's going to be positive for our students. And my question is, let's see what this evolves as, because I think there will be a budget impact. And then again, I'm wondering, we have a curriculum council that we talk about that looks at curriculum for our regular education students. What will be our procedure for looking at appropriate functional curriculum that will then determine what the budget and funding sources will be for our severely handicapped students? I think it's an opportunity, and certainly, again, this is a red flag to me when I see no budget impact. I know there will be one, and I'm hoping that we're looking at that and that will be what's brought back to the board so that we can continue to move forward on our students.
Can I ask one more thing about that? I think Chris has one good point, and I don't know if it would be included in that part, but most special education teachers, at least in our district, have their own little budget too, like $500 or whatever that they spend because on materials. So I think that's assumed that that's part of
the classroom materials budget for special ed is allocated. Yeah. But even more than that, the special ed programs that are coming back, the exchange of the excess costs, instead of going to the county for buying the materials, we're just going to directly buy the materials ourselves. So it's very possible that this funding impact could be zero, depending on replacement costs and other things on a year-over-year basis. But certainly, materials are being paid for from somewhere right now, and most of it, almost all of it, comes from the district's pocket. Now, we will buy the materials directly. Funding impact, probably zero.
Well, that will be great, and again, that's great news, and I look forward to hearing what our process is going to be for looking at functional communication for our students, and that'd be great news if we were able to achieve those kinds of savings and still get great curriculum for our kids.
I don't want to leave the idea that there's savings involved here. It's just an exchange of dollars, one for one. County dollars, district dollars. Now, it all comes from the same source. Basically, our kids are earning those that we're taking back. Now we're going to get the money directly and spend the money directly for product.
Anything else?
I'm still not sure what we're doing.
Well, maybe we're not doing anything then. It feels to me, and what I'm getting from board members is that I should have been there. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to be there. And
And Mr. Unger?
I'm not saying you didn't feel that way, but I, you know, again, when I see no budget impact, I appreciate your comments, and those are things that I need to be assured of, that no budget impact doesn't mean we're not looking at curriculum and we're not looking at buying curriculum for students, because when I see that, that's what this implies, and that doesn't make me very happy.
So, Mr. Unger, if I may, in February, a curriculum council, we're going to be reviewing these courses, their course of studies, and the materials implication. We also have a special item relative to our special education program and classes. So that will be under review at Curriculum Council. And just as Rita explained, in March or April, we'll be coming back with our materials list. So in this process, it will evolve. And maybe to the level, you know, as we evolve with this program, you will be seeing most likely additional requests based on the needs that we surface with our children. So just know it's in process.
Good. And again, I look forward to hearing about those opportunities for our students.
Okay, let's for students. And San Luis Coastal will be hosting that contest Saturday, December 8th, 11 to 3, in this room. And so there'll be artwork from all over the PTA schools all over the county, and we've invited the San Luis Coastal High Schools to display their artwork. And so I would, if anybody's got a free Saturday, I think it would be amazing to come see all this good stuff. This would be, thank you, Chris, for that. Saturday, December 8th, between 11 and 3.
Who's the sponsor, Mark?
This is the 24th District PTA. It's the countywide umbrella for PTA.
Thank you.
John. Walter, you want to? No? Okay. John. Thank you. All the board members are at the California, the School Boards Association, and each of us may have just a brief comment about what was going on. And briefly, one day was a legal symposium for me. The next day was collective bargaining. And the third day was visual performing arts. And briefly, the legal symposium was mainly discussions of items that have been discussed for years and years and years. But there was one interesting thing that I'd like the board to consider down the road. There was a recommendation that when a board meeting begins, the session public before the private, the closed session be in the main meeting room, so people who come to the meeting and want to discuss something on the closed session can have an opportunity to discuss that in a very larger space than what we usually have our closed sessions in. And then after that happens, you go to your closed session and maybe an adjoining room. So at some point, I'd like to just have that discussed. The collective bargaining sessions almost went the entire day, and they discussed both traditional and interest-based bargaining. And there was a quite a bit of information about interest-based bargaining, but it was clear that interest-based bargaining became a positive factor when there was a commitment by all parties concerned and a respect to value communication and come up with creative solutions to issues. And that was an interesting conversation among a number of different groups. And the third day was visual and performing arts, and the whole day was spent on that, the sessions I went to. And what was very interesting was when I shared with the group of educators, administrators, and board members who were at this one session that our board had included in the strategic plan integration of more now push to see that as a valuable part, not just as an add-on. So all 3 days were mostly good. And always a value and a benefit. And spending time with fellow board members is also well received.
I was there for part of 4 days. And weren't you there on Saturday? You were. So it was really 4 days for John, too. I really appreciate the opportunity to go to the conference for the school board. We have a trade show there, and even though I was in classes, I was interested in the trade show partly because, as you know, Sabrina, my daughter, was in one of the booths, and I think our whole district can be proud of our graduates, where someone from K through 12 in this district goes on to get a very good professional job and is there at the trade show dealing with school boards. And I appreciate the board members who went by to say hi to her, by the way, if any did. But in the trade show, they have building trades, and I would like to see our career centers giving more information and sort of a more proactive way to our students. We talked about ROP, but I was talking to these gentlemen, mostly gentlemen there, and they really were people who went to college a little bit and then didn't keep going, but they can be an apprentice for 5 years and have be earning money the whole time with annual raises and have two nights a week classes at community college paid for and end up, you know, with $45 an hour jobs with benefits and be able to buy homes and marry and have children and support their families. And there's, you know, the bricklayers and the sheet metal workers and the electricians and the pipe layers and all the different ones. And I'd like to see that a little bit more available to our students. I talked to some of my own students, and they were pretty excited about that. And also in the trade show, the solar power thing I continue to be interested in, and I talked to someone who talked about how she was in a district where they had to show that it was paying off in 7 years, and for some reason that she explained to me, now it's only 5 years. And they're only going to have to pay 85% of their present electrical bills after the, you know, after they pay off their initial investment. And there's ways, there's a financial person and all these cards I'm going to hand off to you over there, all the staff. I still think that is one way of revenue enhancement where we didn't have to pay so much for our electricity. That's a huge savings. Election hearings, which was very interesting, this very dynamic young African-American woman who's an attorney. She talked about how there's an unconscious racial bias that shows up in data that kids who are African-American, we don't have too many of those, and Hispanic students are suspended and expelled at a higher percentage. So it's just something to be aware of. And our district, I think, does a great job on being fair. And we've had sessions on that Mr. Buckman brought up. And I went to the special ed ones, too. I had a whole day on special education, but I went to the one with the attorney. And we sometimes talk about how FAPE is too nebulous and it's never really defined in the law and this is a problem. But she made a really great statement that it actually is. It's determined by staff. Staff knows the students and assesses and comes up with, you know, what is appropriate. So when districts listen to the recommendations of staff and just consider that that is what FAPE is, I think that's a very good way of looking at it and supporting staff. One on RTI, which is basically kind of going back to, you know, the old ability groups, but bringing in special ed staff to help and all of the different support staff to help with the regular ed RTI, which is probably what we're doing. It was mostly at the elementary level, though. They acted like high school isn't really into RTI yet. And then one on wellness, and it was on Saturday. And of course, we all know that students who aren't well and aren't fit and aren't emotionally well have trouble learning. So we can't overlook. And there was a lot of statistics and data about that. And I got a free program from CSBA for our district. And I, of course, got all the exciting, inspirational sessions where the speakers speak to us and about being great parents and listeners to students and get a chance to get our books autographed. And I even got Larry Tramatola's book. He autographed it. One person can make a difference, which I totally agree with. So thank you all for letting this board go to such a great event. CIF, too. I want to say one last thing. I went to that one. CIF, and I brought up the question, and I interviewed my own students who were former student athletes in this district, and one of my kids made a suggestion that maybe CIF recommending that there be some limits on practice time. So it's kind of interesting. Thank you.
Thank you. I very much appreciated the opportunity to go to this convention as well, which for me was really in-service training since I hadn't even begun on the board yet. So that was both timely and essential. And I attended what for the rest of you would be sort of elementary, some elementary sessions to just come get up to speed with the whole process, which was very helpful to me. But as the week went on, I was able to attend some other sessions and learn beyond the basics. And I was very proud that I attended some sessions where solutions to problems were talked about, and San Luis Obispo Unified School District and San Luis Obispo County was held up as an example of something that's being done and things that are being done well, including our preschool program. And so that was a pleasure to learn that. On the very last day, something came to my attention that I wanted to share with all of you, and perhaps it'll be an opportunity to delve into this at a future date, maybe with a closer look. But I was struck by and motivated to heed the call of State Superintendent Jack O'Connell when he spoke to us at one of the group meetings to close the achievement gap. He called it the civil rights issue of the decade, and he was referring to the fact that students of color and ESL students and socially economically disadvantaged students do not benefit equally from our instruction, not just here, but everywhere in California, and that this problem has got to be bridged. At first, it seemed like an academic exercise, and then I happened upon this workshop on the last day that was put on by Santa Ana Unified School District, and they're doing a project there that's called Helping One Student to Succeed, or HOS, and they're doing it in a way that may become even more important given our economic uncertainties. They're forming a coalition. They have formed a coalition with their community government, with county government, and also community volunteers to offer tutoring 1 hour a week during flex time. They got their county board of supervisors to grant an hour of lunch flex time so that their workers could be encouraged to volunteer. And it's a program that's set up. It's run by a credentialed were able to achieve 2 grade levels of improvement in their English language skills, and the hosts, the volunteers, got to experience the reward of helping a student become successful. So I'm hoping that we can sort of lead the way by forming these kind of coalitions with the university, with the county employees, with our volunteer community, to try to bridge our own achievement gap. And that was something that I came away with, and I'm very excited to be a part of. So thank you for sending me.
And I'll just close by saying it was a great conference for me. I'm on the Delegate Assembly for CSBA, and one of the things we spent a lot of time talking about was the 2 competing eminent domain initiatives that we'll be seeing on the upcoming ballot. And you'll be able to look at those. CSBA wound up taking a no position, or actually a no on one of them and a no position on the other. And then, as Mr. Buckman mentioned, the mandated cost suit that CSBA will be spearheading has been filed, I believe, last week in, was it San Bernardino court, someplace like, or San Diego, to recover the mandated costs. Then I was lucky enough to be able to go to a couple of sessions on special ed. And I wanted to point out that Mr. Buckman is too modest that he was a moderator and a presenter on a session on First Amendment and newspapers with himself and somebody from San Diego Unified, their public affairs officer, and Beth Schuster, who's the editor of the Los Angeles Times. And it was a great session. Mark did a great job, and I would like to recognize Mark for that. And then all the political stuff, hearing Dan Walters and Kevin Gordon, and then I would invite anybody who didn't see Sherry Bebich Jeffy next time when she comes around. She's a commentator and a USC professor, political analyst, and she just was phenomenal and had a lot of really interesting stuff to say. We would be looking at putting her back on for next year. She was just great, and she was unfortunately at the end. But anyway, is there Dr. Valentine? I'm sorry.
If I might, thank you, Chris. A couple of things. Number one, Mr. Unger shared with us last board meeting that he had been appointed chair, Chris, and the honor he brings to us as a school district. I would throw in one more piece, and that is that at the last board meeting, we nominated Chris to the Board of Delegates. I understand that's now superfluous or redundant because he is on the Board of Directors. It opens up another potential slot, so any board member interested in being considered for nomination from San Luis Coastal, we would be happy to put your name in nomination. So let us know if you're interested in that, and we'll bring it back to the board. I think the deadline for that, Kim, is January 7th.
I think we would have to bring it back at the next meeting in order to get it in time. So.
Exactly.
Okay, anybody else? Seeing none, then let's adjourn this meeting.